Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Glad to have you all with us on this Monday show. If you're listening in real time, it's a Monday show. And I want to say, as we get started, that for those of you who are just tuning in, as of today, should you decide you want to, you can watch us in the radio studio by going to the GPB News Facebook page. There's a live stream of the show there. Jim Galloway, we're still a radio show. I want to point out this
and,
is...
And let us prove that we still have the faces for it.
And that, of course, is Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him in the Wednesday and Sunday newspaper. He oversees the Political Insider blog at Politically Georgia at MyAJC. His colleague, Kyle Wingfield, who writes a column on Thursdays and Sundays in the AJC, joins us. As we all know, the AJC chooses to divide its columnists into the conservatives and, you don't call them liberals, do you, on the other side of you?
I think the official terminology is from the left and from
the
right.
And your column is always listed in the from the right column. So we want to make that point. We're also joined today by Melita Easters. She is the founder of the Georgia Win List, which is an organization dedicated to finding Democratic women to run for office, those who are pro-choice, and she's also the director of that organization. It's particularly good to have you here today because soon on the show we're going to get into a conversation about the fact qualifying opened today for all state offices.
We're excited to talk about it.
Heath Garrett, also with us, a Republican strategist. He's been around for a very long time working with people like Johnny Isaacson and others. That wasn't an insult. That was a compliment. You're a veteran.
I'm just glad to be here and defend liberty wherever we can.
All right. Let's get right to it because we have some breaking news we want to talk about. Excuse me. First, let's pick up on one national story that we'll get into it later in the show. But within the last 2 hours, the Speaker of the House, the U.S. House, Paul Ryan, made it clear that he is opposed to President Trump's proposal to put tariffs on steel and aluminum. And he said through a spokesman, "We are extremely worried about the consequences of a trade war and are urging the White House to not advance with this plan."
Yeah, that's huge news, number one, because as we were talking before we went on air, this is a topic that Congress has deferred to the president on over the last few decades.
Yeah, it is the purview of Congress to sign off on trade legislation. But as you point out, they've turned it over to the president in previous administrations. So we're going to see what happens here. Over the weekend, of course, the representatives of the White House said, no, we're going forward with this, and the president could be instituting these tariffs within the next week.
And if you listen to the tweets or watch for the tweets this in the morning, he doubled down on it.
He did. All right, we're going to talk more about the tariffs later on in the show because we also have some important state news. For instance, just in the last couple of hours, Governor Deal signed the legislation that removes some of the more onerous provisions that made it harder for families in Georgia to adopt children. This was a bill that was bogged down, Melita, for a long time by the fact that it had a provision put in by the Georgia Senate which would protect religious agencies that didn't want to adopt to gays and lesbians. That language was pulled out. The clean bill went through, and the governor's now signed it into law.
Well, and there are a lot of people rejoicing about that because it will allow more families to adopt children out of foster care, and that overhaul had been desperately needed for several years, and last year it bogged down with the messiness of the LGBT issue. That issue is now being taken up in a separate piece of legislation, which has passed the Senate.
Yeah, Kyle, we know that Senator William Ligon from South Georgia has sponsored, and as Melita says, passed through the Senate, a separate bill that would protect those religious organizations that don't want to adopt to gay and lesbian couples.
Right, and it's pending before the House right now, and my current information on it is that it will probably remain pending before the House.
Yeah, it's in Wendell Willard's House Judiciary Committee.
So Willard's not the kind of guy. His track record is such that he's not likely to want to support this, is he?
It's been, I mean, I think there are, one time he held it, I think one time he let it pass.
Okay. Okay. Well, what are we expecting on this one?
Probably not. Given this flap over the NRA and Delta, I would think that that would be a huge mistake if you're still even thinking about trying to get Amazon.com.
Well, I think Amazon bid is dead, but you certainly don't want to, on top of losing the Amazon bid, make everybody in the movie industry angry when the state's presence with studios and movies shot on location here rising.
Heath, the interesting thing about the Ligon bill is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, there are already protections in place. There are no civil rights statutes in Georgia which would force an organization that doesn't want to adopt to gay or lesbian families, force them to do so.
No, that's exactly right. And this is one of the reasons why the conservative community is kind of divided on religious liberty and these types of bills. A, there's been no evidence of anyone violating these, you know, the religious rights of individuals not wanting to adopt or place those individuals. And number two, there are strong protections, particularly in the state of Georgia, under both federal law and under the First Amendment of both the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. Our attorney general would come immediately to the defense of any agency or any group who felt like their faith was being violated, and we're supremely confident that that would be so. In some respects, this is a little bit of a solution in search of a problem, and therefore doesn't have the unified support out there, and I think that it probably does remain bottled up.
The one thing that this new adoption bill that Governor Deal signed does do that really changes, I think, the geography of adoption in Georgia is that it permits couples who are using a private attorney, adoptions with private attorneys. The birth mother in those cases can receive financial support if we're meeting a fairly strict guideline of the courts.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was a somewhat contentious issue as the debate unfolded, because there were accusations on the other side that this amounted to the potential for baby selling. Right, Kyle?
Right. And, you know, I didn't really buy those arguments. The premise is that if you allow it, it becomes mandatory, in effect. That if you can do it, then everyone will do it, and it'll drive up the cost of adoptions. I think to believe that, you have to believe that the judicial check that is in place on to approve those expenses after the fact, it is after the fact, since when have courts not been willing to impose penalties on people after the fact for breaking the law?
So let's just, to conclude that part of the conversation, say this is something that people who want to see adoption made more readily available. We have a lot of foster families. We don't have as many adoptive parents out there. And so for 2 years now, there has been a fight to get this statute passed so people can more easily adopt. This is a victory for that community.
Right,
certainly.
Right. And just a quick shout out to Burt Reeves, the state House rep from Marietta, who pushed it through.
All right. Speaking of House members, one of the things we were going to certainly talk about for a good portion of the show today is the fact that qualifying opened this morning. It's the period of time. It lasts 1 week. It ends Friday at noon, when anybody who wants to run for office in the state of Georgia has to come forward, plunk down whatever the fee is for the office they're running for, sign the papers, and officially become candidates for the office they're seeking. And in a few minutes, we'll talk about what we might see in terms of changes in the legislature based on the qualifying that goes on. But Galloway, we had some big news this morning about somebody who is not going to qualify.
Right. Yes. Yet another Republican who's decided he's not going to run, and that's Earl Earhart. He is actually my state rep out of West Cobb. He's the longest serving House Republican now with 30 years of service. I think, if my memory's correct, I think he beat Joe Mack Wilson way, way back in the day.
Joe Mack Wilson, who was one of those, the old good Democrat, old boys,
Democrats,
right? The yellow dog Democrats who controlled the state house. for many, many years. He was a member of the what was called the Green Door Committee back in the day.
And now, one of the more colorful characters.
Yeah. Now, as far as Earl's concerned, you listeners will probably kind of recognize the name as someone who Earl has tangled with the Board of Regents over several years over university policy, whether it's how individual universities handle accusations of sexual assault, whether it's funding for this building or whether that building gets it. He was deeply involved in the fracas over Sam Olens over at Kennesaw State University.
We should also point out,
some would say he helped cause the resignation of Sam Olens because he set Sam Olens up.
Yeah, there was this, he was accused, accused may not be the right word, but he was, the account had it that it was Earl Earhart and your sheriff up there in Cobb, Jim,
Neil Warren,
who went to Sam Olens after the cheerleaders took a knee in protest of police violence, what they see as police violence against African Americans, and it was the sheriff and Earl who went to Olens and said, "You better not let them get away with it." But go ahead.
What's interesting, Earl Earhart is not running, but his wife, Ginny, is running in his stead.
Okay. So it's interesting that we have three Cobb County people. You're not Cobb, are you?
Nope.
I didn't think so. So we have three. You were in Cobb, though, weren't you?
No, I was in Fulton.
Okay, sorry. Well, Heath, you're a Cobb guy.
Absolutely.
What does it mean for – what is Earl Earhart's impact been on the county, and what will it mean that he's gone?
Well, if you think about it, I was telling some younger Republicans earlier today at lunch that when Earl Earhart was elected to the state legislature, it was so long ago that a Republican getting elected in the suburbs was big news because he defeated a long-term Democrat, right? And Earl's part of the rise of the Republican Party, not only in the state, but in the South and in the suburbs, and he was at the front end of that. He's had a tremendous impact on the Republican caucus and on the county. He did help and forge alliances along the way. As partisan as he might be or sound at times, he also formed important alliances with Roy Barnes and other Democrats to help the county and the northern suburbs continue to grow.
Right. His clout has declined somewhat because you'll recall when Glenn Richardson became the first Republican House Speaker, Earl Earhart was named the chairman of the House Rules Committee, which is the number three spot in the Capitol.
Let me go. Kyle, we should point out it's interesting that Delta has been so much in the news in terms of people at the legislature being upset with their distancing themselves from the NRA. Earl was very involved a couple of sessions ago in trying to deny Delta the fuel tax exemption they were looking for. They've been looking for a long time, and he did it then because he was upset about their getting involved in the religious liberty issue. So he's been a powerful guy in the state house.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, that in 3 years ago, it was a case of Delta had it, or one penny of it was removed. They were exempt, and that was part of the Roads and Bridges funding bill, HB 170.
The Democratic woman who had announced she would be running against Earl had already raised more than $60,000 for her bid. And so if he had stayed in office, he would have faced some formidable door-to-door canvassing and a woman with some pretty impeccable credentials. So it'll be very interesting to see whether his power in the past translates to his wife.
Is her candidacy
Jen Slipikoff?
Candidacy tied to Earl's actions on the sexual assault issue?
In part, she is a person who we described her as nobody better to take on the biggest bully in the General Assembly than a mama bear who has defended her own child against bullies.
All right, which takes us to a really important conversation today. And Jim, I'll start with you, but I want everybody to get engaged in this. We are on the cusp of what could be a sea change again for the first time since Roy Barnes lost re-election back in 1992.
2002.
I meant 2000. Thank you very much. Thank you. Where we might all of a sudden see Democrats make some moves they haven't made in the General Assembly, particularly since then.
Right. I don't think no one, I think, in their right mind thinks that Republican control of either chamber is at
stake. Okay,
at fair
enough. Right, you're right.
But what we have situations on the South Side in Henry County. We have five state legislative vacancies in Gwinnett County, all held by Republicans in a rapidly changing demographic climate, and we have several openings coming up in Cobb too. And what's interesting is, and we could probably tie it together, but you've got all the transit debate going on at the same time in the same climate, and in both Gwinnett and Cobb, if things play out one way or another, you could see legislative delegations shift control from Republican to Democrat.
I want to get the Republicans. Heath, do you imagine that Republicans are going to lose some of these seats in suburban Atlanta?
I definitely think it's a possibility, and we as Republicans should never take these threats lightly. What you do have is some major demographic shifting that's going on in both what we now, you know, what demographers now call near urban areas. So what we used to all call the suburbs are now referred to. If you're within 15 miles of an urban core, you're now, you know, viewed as near urban. And that was determined before you started seeing these demographic shifts. But demographics don't have to be destiny for the Republican Party. But there is a chance in these majority minority districts, right? As these areas start to trend more Hispanic, more African American, more Asian, larger female populations, if Republicans don't have the right candidates for these districts, right, then they are going to be less competitive. Now, what's happening is in reverse is we're winning rural and more truly ex-urban seats, the last few remaining Democratic seats that exist in those areas. And so I think there's a chance for neutrality on that. But I do think Republicans could lose a supermajority if they're not careful. But if we recruit the right candidates, we'll be competitive.
The supermajorities in the House.
Right.
But you have had in the past three election cycles almost 80% of the Georgia House seats or Senate seats went uncontested, and that will not be the case this year. There are at least 10 women running for previously Republican, Democratic women running for previously Republican-held Senate seats, and almost 30 women who will be running for previously held Republican House seats. You're not going to have an 80% unchallenged, uncontested landscape.
How is that different from previous cycles, the number of female candidates?
Well, there haven't been so many candidates, women candidates, in any previous cycle. You've not had this many women running against Republicans ever in the past in Georgia. This is record-setting and unprecedented. And it's pretty unprecedented to have so many seats in play when the past three election cycles, you've had 80% of those sitting legislators not having opposition.
Kyle, is this the Trump effect?
Possibly. I mean, I think that factors in here. But let's also, I mean, Earl Herhart's not the only one who's stepping away. The number I heard this morning from someone was that there would be 24 Republican House members.
Wow.
Not running for re-election this year. That's 20% of all the House Republicans there are. If you have that many openings, and some of those are people running for higher office, you know, that kind of thing. But for the most part, it's people who are stepping away, and that doesn't even get us into what's going on the Senate side. The opportunity, in addition to the competitive, you know, the added competition that Melita's talking about, just the opportunity of a vacancy there is just a very huge thing.
That's going to be interesting to watch.
It's easier for somebody to challenge the other party, whether it's Democrat or Republican currently in power, in an open seat than it is to run against a sitting incumbent.
All right, Heath, before we take a break, you've been a Republican strategist for a long time. If you're running a candidate for an open seat, a Republican candidate for an open seat, forget about a primary. You just talk about running against a Democrat in the general.
Right.
What's the message?
Well, you have to get back to the bread and butter issues, education, economics. It really is the, you know, it's all the economy. Are you running a race that fits the district you're running for, number one. And number two, I think the most important word probably in the politics in the future is independent. Do independent voters, which is the fastest growing identification in politics, view you as independent enough from the party or from special interests in order to represent them? If you are a Republican who can get a hold of that, you're going to be fine in these competitive districts.
Then let me ask you one more question about that.
Yes.
Do you run as a Josh McCoon, William Ligon Republican, or do you run on Nathan Deal's record, which, as much as he doesn't like the word, has been pretty progressive in many ways, with certainly criminal justice reform and other issues?
There's no question that he's competitive districts. You've got to run on the Johnny Isaacs and Nathan Deal, get things done, serve the people, be bipartisan when it makes sense to be that way. The Republicans, and there are certain districts where you can run to the right with McCoon and with Ligon, but those are fewer and far between.
And Melita, if you're a Democratic candidate, if you're advising a Democrat who's looking for an open seat running against a Republican challenger, what's your message?
You talk about sensible gun policy. You talk about fully funding Medicare. You talk about trying to save the rural health hospitals and health care issues that rural Georgia faces. You talk about education. And you talk about the more moderate part of the liberal platform, but you don't run as a Nancy Pelosi Democrat in Georgia.
I've got to get a break in. You've just heard it. Kyle, Jim, we don't even need to cover the election. We just heard what this race is going to be all about moving forward. That's what you get on Political Rewind. We'll take a break and be right back.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car. Drive so far.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Producer Tom Faust just told me that you're watching us on Facebook Live. You can watch us if you're listening on the radio right now by going to the GPB News Facebook page. Starting today and every show, we'll be streaming the video on that page. And Galloway is the longest colleague of mine on this show. I want to say to you that the comments that Tom says we're getting are the people are enjoying putting a face to the name. And I agree with you, that isn't necessarily a good thing in our case.
No.
So check us out. We'd love to have you watch us on Facebook Live. So let's move on to another couple of some really interesting issues. Jim, we thought, you sent a note out this morning saying, we thought we'd gotten to the other side of the Delta NRA controversy, at least that the on-point controversy. The repercussions throughout the governor's race and other races will continue. And tell us what happened in Florida today.
Well, what happened, it actually happened Friday. It took a while to bubble up to us. But you had the Florida legislature take aim at Delta and scratch a jet fuel tax break.
Now, that break is in place. They have a contract till 2020, I believe.
That's
break?
The car rental agency.
Oh, I apologize.
They went after Avis, a car rental agency, too, which has a state contract through 2020, and apparently they intend to break it.
Enterprise,
thank you. And it looks like this isn't going away. That you also have to remember, this is Florida is probably got the most powerful NRA lobbyist. What's the name that I put there? Marion somebody or other.
And I'll can't find remember. It for you.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting notation that Florida.
Marion Hammer is her name.
Where the Parkland, Florida massacre happened, that they're going after Delta for criticizing the NRA.
Interesting angle here. The pending reduction of the tax in Florida was one of the things that Delta's lobbyists talked about here, as here's yet another state. In fact, in the chart that they would show you about the the level of these jet fuel taxes in other states, especially states that have air hubs. They had gone ahead and assumed the reduction happening in Florida. So this the case that was being made here was predicated on, you know, well, this is the trend is going this way.
Right.
Maybe not.
So let me stay with Kyle for just a second then bring all of the rest of you in. You wrote about it over the weekend in your column. Galloway, you had you wrote about this in your column as well. But one of the things that we talked about, at least briefly on the show Friday, but that seems to be continuing to grow, is this kind of remarkable schism between the business community, the corporate community, and the Republican or the conservatives in the Republican Party. They used to march not completely in lockstep, but they were certainly, you know, companions on the road toward whatever fiscal responsibility, whatever you want to call it. And that gap has widened enormously. What are the consequences of that going to be?
Well, it's going to change the conversation that you have in these elections, you know, that Heath and Melita were just talking about. That's, you know, that brings a different dynamic to what you're going to hear from candidates on both parties. You know, it's a change on the Republican side and potentially an opening on the Democratic side to take that ground that the Republican, in some cases, may be ceding. I think one thing, and I didn't get to listen to everything last week. You probably covered this to some degree, but one of the things is this was viewed as kind of a corporate welfare by a lot of Republicans. They didn't like it before the NRA thing happened. They had all agreed to sort of jump together on this thing because they were getting the changes on the income tax side that they wanted. So there was a lot of discomfort with this, and that is one of the things that I think gets to the point you were making, which is I think before, if it was pro-business, then it was a good thing. And there's some pushback on that idea that, well, pro-business isn't necessarily pro-market, and that pro-business isn't necessarily conducive with doing a lot of other things that Republicans traditionally like to do, such as lowering taxes on individuals.
Well, dissing Delta in Atlanta is a little bit like asking for Pepsi at the drive-in club.
Well, so let me ask you about that, though, Melita. It's interesting, this flip that we've watched. It's a little surprising to hear some Democrats who are so quick now to rush to the aid of Delta Airlines when, in fact, Democrats have for a long time looked at the business community and said, well, you know, we like working with them in some areas, but we don't want to cater to them all the time. There is something of a change in the perspective all of a sudden, isn't there?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that Democrats are also wanting to create jobs and good jobs and to stab a knife or a shiv, whatever you want to call it, in the back of your state's largest employer is seen by almost most people as rather dumb public policy. And I think the other thing you're not looking at is a lot of the Delta pilots are retired military. They're kind of close to their guns. They shoot on the weekends, that sort of thing. But they don't like having the lieutenant governor of the state diss their employer.
Jim?
I put out a Sunday column last week that kind of drew on a 2016 meeting that I sat in on among some newly elected state legislators. And what was being sold to them at that point was a tax break for the music industry, to bring music industry into Georgia, much like the tax breaks that have brought the film and TV industry. And a fellow from Douglas, Georgia, in Coffee County, not Douglas, Douglasville, he stood up and he asked this question, that is, why do we want to bring in all of these new people who are going to tell us how to live our lives and try to change us? And that, to me, is the dynamic that we're being hit with
right now,
the Republican side.
Heath, let me throw something out at you and see how you reflect upon this.
Sure.
Casey Cagle had an op-ed piece in the AJC the other day. I think it was posted on Friday. And here's just a part of it. Ask any conservative who has tried to have a successful career in fields such as academia, journalism, or entertainment, and you'll find out pretty quickly there's a clear bias against people who have right-of-center political views. While this behavior has been largely confined to certain industries, it's alarming to see the same approach spreading to corporate boardrooms. Sadly, Delta is not alone in feeling pressured to take liberal positions on controversial issues. That's just one paragraph and a couple sentences of this entire op-ed in which he says, gee, I really have no argument with Delta for the most part.
Right.
But I found that rhetoric to be right out, a little bit surprising that the lieutenant governor is going to run for governor and now apparently is going to run against, he's going to run as Trump does, against the media, against academia.
Right.
How do you reflect upon that statement?
Well, you know, in working in these Republican politics, there's no question that he's reflecting a real sentiment that's out there amongst half of the country, right? It's not a subset of a subset. Even I, I was watching the Oscars last night, and it's very frustrating. I used to be able to watch I love movies. I love I love the fact that Hollywood's moving to Georgia and producing all this, but I get frustrated as a conservative, as a free market conservative, who feels like now that I watch the Oscars or when I listen to corporate America, they are always taking the politically correct or center-left stance on every issue, kind of knee-jerk. And so I feel for Casey Cagle. He is reflecting what Republican primary voters are frustrated about on a daily basis with corporate America and with these institutions. I do think, right, and I've said this last week, we couldn't need cooler heads to prevail on certain issues like this because there's an economic development component to this. And there are probably better ways to have discussions about the Second Amendment. But he is tapping into something that's not just the base of the Republican Party. I really think half of the country looks at the Oscars and looks at these corporate edicts as if you're preaching to us that we are either not intelligent, we're not thoughtful, and that we're somehow backwards because we have different viewpoints than Hollywood or New York.
Yeah, there's a sense that I didn't leave the business community. The business community left me.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
With a lot.
Well, again, the widening gap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
There are two women candidates that it will be instructive to watch their contribution reports, because Lucy McBath, who is running for House District 37 in Cobb County.
Yeah, that's Sam Teasley's seat.
She raised more than $100,000. But she's a former Delta flight attendant. And Louisa Wakeman, who's running for House District 43 in Cobb County, is a current Delta flight attendant. So it will be interesting to see if the Delta community supports two of their own in these challenges to Republicans.
Oh, that'll be fascinating.
And you know what else is fascinating? Melita Easter is always on message, and that's one of the reasons we love having you here, Melita.
Thank you, Melita.
But let me take you off message for a minute. As unhappy as you are with the way in which the Republican legislature and candidates for higher office have handled the Delta NRA situation, just a year ago or less, when New York's Public Theater mounted a production of Macbeth, which Delta was a sponsor of, they withdrew their sponsorship because the production chose to portray, I don't mean Macbeth, I mean Julius Caesar, I apologize. The production chose to put a Trump lookalike
right
in the role of Julius Caesar. And of course, in that play, Julius Caesar is assassinated. And it was then Democrats and liberals who screamed bloody murder about the fact that Delta was suppressing the arts, suppressing free speech, making it a political statement to the left. I mean, this notion of judging corporations from a political point of view seems to me dangerous.
I think that the CEO of Delta's letter was very well written, and his statement saying their values were not for sale was very on point. And I think that the point Delta made at the time about withdrawing the support of that particular theatrical program, the point they made then, and I'm not so sure I wouldn't agree with them, was that it had crossed a taste line for their satisfaction. And that theatrical production probably quite rightfully so, made a lot of Democrats uncomfortable.
Okay. Well, we haven't seen yet. Jim, as we started this portion of the conversation, we said we thought maybe we could put this to rest. But in fact, Heath Garrett wants to make one more comment.
And my sources tell me, though, that there's still movement afoot, that Delta is looking at their policies to try to become liberal, conservative, neutral. Yes. In its support and or of organizations. And number two, that the jet fuel tax could come back up and that the senators claim they have a majority in the state Senate who would pass it as a standalone. So we may not have heard the last of this.
Right. And to your earlier point, Bill, I don't think this hurts Casey Cagle.
Certainly not in the Republican primary it doesn't. You made that point in your column that you think that he may have secured the Republican nomination because of his outspoken opposition to Delta on this.
Right. It does strike that nerve that Kyle was talking about.
All right, let's do this. Let's get another break out of the way. And as long as we're talking about gubernatorial candidate Casey Cagle, when we come back, let's hear from Brian Kemp, who has got his first TV commercial out there. We'll play it when we get back from the break and discuss just where it puts him and where it puts Republicans in this gubernatorial primary. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Luis Alberto Urrea. The son of a Mexican father and American mother, he says he grew up with a border wall in his own family. He's written about doing relief work in the mountainous garbage dumps of Tijuana, where the poor scrape out a living, and he's followed the deadly path of immigrants trying to cross the border. He has a new novel. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut in the House for Political Rewind today. AJC political writer Jim Galloway and columnist Kyle Wingfield. Melita Easter is the founder and director of the Georgia Win List, a Democratic organization looking for and supporting women candidates who are pro-choice for office, and Republican strategist Heath Garrett. So Brian Kemp is obviously running for governor on the Republican side, the Secretary of State. Jim, we saw a Mason-Dixon poll come out last week. Mason-Dixon over the years has had a, you know, they do okay. Partly is they're a national organization, and they kind of move in poll in states where they don't necessarily understand, I think, the lay of the land, but they're still, you know, an organization that is out there, and their polls are taken quite seriously. That poll showed Casey Cagle with a pretty significant lead, I think.
Right, but Kemp not out of the picture.
Right,
and I think the undecideds were pretty hefty size. To your point though, I mean this is one poll,
right?
And generally, what you need is a firm that's doing a series of polls so you can see the movement and see some consistency in there. What we're now is we're just getting individual snapshots from individual cameras. So we can't really say that. But I would say that, you know, I mean, but what we've seen from Brian Kemp this morning is I think, an interesting permutation of the Republican primary, going very heavy on immigration, very heavy on Donald Trump. And it looks like, you know, he may be trying to take advantage of that gender split within the Republican Party. You know, maybe concede the female conservative vote to Casey Cagle while he goes after the white male.
So let's listen to the audio of the spot that the Kemp campaign released today and come back and talk about it.
Kate Steinle, Edwin Jackson, and the Cannon family, all killed by illegal immigrants. Donald Trump is right. We must secure the border and end sanctuary cities.
As Secretary of State, Brian Kemp fought Obama twice and won to stop illegal immigrants from voting.
I'll do the same as your governor. I'll enforce the ban on sanctuary cities and track and immediately deport all criminal aliens so our kids don't become the next victims.
Conservative businessman Brian Kemp for governor, putting Georgians first.
Heath, what do you think?
Well, there's no question that the most popular figure in the Republican primary politics today is Donald Trump. in Georgia, his approval rating is consistently in the mid to high 90s, which has been unheard of since Ronald Reagan.
Is it really?
And amongst Republican primary voters.
Are you talking now about internal polling, or are you talking
both
about—
both internal, external polling. Every poll I've seen in the last year and a half, from candidates and from corporate entities and even, you know, bipartisan groups.
Okay.
It's amazing how popular.
Above 80%.
Above 80%. And I've seen it in the 90s, right? If you really get down to the four of four Republican primary voters, these are people who voted to four out of the last four primaries. He is extremely popular. So, A, it's always a winner to identify with Donald Trump in the primary in Georgia right now. Not because of anything specific. People just are mad at Washington. Number two, immigration is an issue that obviously is a wedge issue even within Republican primary politics. And Brian's grassroots base is outside of the northern suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia. And so he's definitely playing to his strengths here. He's identifying himself for these voters as a principled conservative and is a little bit more conservative maybe than the front runner, Casey Cagle.
Did you notice the ID they used on him? Businessman Brian Kemp.
Yeah, I was not Secretary of State as well. I was interested in that as well.
There's no question. The businessman, not a politician, is an extremely popular line in primary politics.
Well, and he's certainly done a poor job as Secretary of State from some judgment quarters.
Yeah, let me go back to the commercial. So the first name that is mentioned in the spot is Kate Steinle. This was the young woman who was killed by a gunshot in San Francisco. Trump talked about her a lot on the campaign trail as well. Melita, what's interesting about Kate Steinle, the tragedy of her death is we have to acknowledge. The man who was initially arrested and charged in that for murder, the courts ended up wiping out the murder arrest. They said this was probably an accidental shooting, and there were some actual questions. He used a gun. He found a weapon. He found the gun, and it went off, apparently, in terms of the court's understanding of this. And there's a question as to whether it was the federal authorities who did not secure the weapon, which they knew was missing, whether they were to blame for all this. I mean, look, that's a very— I realize how convoluted that just sounded. The point is, it certainly in that case, it's not quite as clear cut as Kemp wants it to be.
But the red meat Republican base he is playing to in this ad won't dig deeply enough to know the permutations of the case you just outlined.
You agree, Kyle, with Heath, that this is just what Republican voters in Georgia want to hear?
I think it is. That's certainly the lane that Brian Kemp is in this election. I don't know that you can say all Republican primary voters want this, but he's going after those who do. Casey Cagle's dabbled in this some as well, but I think Kemp is clearly going after those. You know, does that get you to a runoff? I mean, I thought one of the more interesting things about that poll is everybody's poll has a lot of undecideds. For there to be that, what they usually don't show is for there to be that many undecideds and to have Cagle below 30 and three candidates behind him all in double digits. I mean, to me, that was the interesting part of that. And again, I'm not totally sure I buy it, those exact numbers, but if that's anything close to real, then we've got a heck of a race.
One thing we should note that the poll was taken before the NRA Delta flag.
Exactly. It was the last week of February, I believe.
And there are two things in that poll that don't jive with what I've seen from other polls independent of these candidates running. Casey has always been not only above 30, but also really above 40 in every other independent poll that I've seen. And the other thing is they had Brian a little bit lower than he has been in some of those polls. And then there's no way that Clay Tippins and Hunter Hill are already as high as that poll had them. That really throws that poll out for me. They just haven't spent enough money yet to have that kind of name.
I think right. I mean, I apologize actually for even mentioning the poll, since Jim and you are both right. It's too early to be talking about polls, and certainly we ought to look at polls that are surveying voters over a period of time. So I won't let it happen again for a little bit of time at least.
Well, the thing about the high undecideds is that everybody who watches commercial real-time television just needs to brace for a lot of ads between now and and May, because with that many undecided voters, TV stations are going to really be selling a lot of ads.
I want to, you know, one of our regular listeners, Councilman Khalid, said a tweet this morning saying, you used to read listeners' tweets on the air. You haven't done that enough lately. And he's right. So I do want to read one from Ann Gerber, and she's pointing to you, Heath.
Great.
She tweets at Ann Tree Group. She says, interesting that the Oscars celebrating women not being raped and harassed is considered left-of-center political correctness.
Well, I'm offended by that comment, since everybody's offended in America. As the husband of an extremely powerful female executive in the media industry, and as the father of a 15-year-old daughter who defends her own principles every day, that's outrageous. It's the politically correct. No, nobody's upset about defending women from being raped.
Yeah,
it's all the other left of center things.
I read that. Well, now you know what Galloway, Kyle Wingfield, and I go through every single day.
I'm being a little facetious.
Now 17 people will double down on that position against you. Yeah. That's what you've just created.
I read it because it is interesting to hear how our listeners are hearing our program, and their voices do deserve to be heard. But thank you for responding to that.
I think this is part of the debate we ought to have, right?
That's all right. We have Ted Barfield, who is a frequent tweeter. He tweets at T_barf. And he is, I don't think there's been a tweet from T Barf this year or last that said anything even slightly nice about the way we do this show, Galloway.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
All right, let's talk. We only have a couple minutes remaining. Kyle, what is going on with these steel and aluminum tariffs? Is Trump, the president, going to put these things in place? We got assurances over the weekend on the Sunday shows from his people that absolutely he was going to move forward with them. We now have the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, saying, well, not with our cooperation, he's not. And then we have Trump saying, well, if we can negotiate NAFTA deal that works for us, Canada and Mexico will be excluded. But over the weekend, his people were saying, nope, across the board. What is happening here?
Well, first of all, if you didn't see this coming, you weren't paying attention in 2016. He campaigned against traditional, I would go beyond saying traditional Republican, traditional the bipartisan consensus on free trade. And so, you know, whether the specifics of this surprise you, the general theme shouldn't. You know, it's interesting to me that we've already gotten to the defense that you mentioned that, well, this is the opening bid in a negotiation. I don't know if it really works if you tell everybody that's what you're doing. And I'm not sure that it works when the second bid is, oh, not that we'll stop doing something. We're going to escalate too. And that's what happens in these deals. And there's plenty of history to show how it works. It's interesting. The retaliation targets almost never have anything to do with the industry in question, but are very politically savvy.
Harley Davidson,
state of Wisconsin, Paul Ryan,
bourbon.
Kentucky bourbon, Mitch McConnell, yeah. Florida oranges, purple swing state. So our trading partners are very savvy about how this works. I think you have to ask, what are you even really trying to accomplish? Take how our partners will respond. The number that I've seen, there are 40 jobs in metals-consuming industries in America for every one in the aluminum and steel production industries. You've got to make an enormous impact on the aluminum and steel producing side to offset it wouldn't take much of a decline in the industries that use those things. There's just no win here. The math does not add up on this stuff.
Georgia's got a 15-year history now of investment in automobile manufacturing, and it is entirely predicated on the import of steel and steel made and steel manufactured products.
Well, and in fact, Melita, the South, our neighbors all have auto manufacturing plants, you know, they mostly foreign auto manufacturers, and nevertheless, they're bringing steel into this country. I thought it was interesting that at one point the president, it was interesting that he talked at one point about South Carolina and the problems with trade there, and seemed to be in a way kind of punishing Lindsey Graham in some way for at times being an outspoken critic of his. But what's the auto industry in the South has been crucial to our economic growth.
Well, it is crucial to our economic growth, and I think trying to figure out how the president's brain works is a pretty difficult challenge, because sometimes you're just not sure where he's coming from. And I think the other thing that's very troubling about these tariffs are the cabinet-level secretary who sold a bunch of stock, which would be affected by the announcement of the tariffs. That's a troubling ethics issue in a White House that's already terribly troubled. With ethics issues.
I'm sorry. Heath, what's a Johnny Isaacson going to say about this sort of thing? For that matter, what's David Perdue, a pro-business senator, going to say?
Yeah, I think Johnny Isaacson is taking the approach that he's going to call balls and strikes on President Trump. Things that he agrees with him on, he's going to agree with him, you know, voraciously, and things where he disagrees. I think this calls Johnny's been a free trader his entire life and understands the macroeconomic and the microeconomic implications of good trade policy. I think that this puts Senator Perdue in a little bit more of a predicament. Senator Perdue has put himself in the position of being the defender of the administration almost no matter what. And so I think he's going to kind of challenge some of his philosophical alignment. I know as a former executive, he's much more of a free trader by philosophy. But now he has a White House. But I think Trump welcomes the conflict within the White House. Half of his cabinet does not like this. But I agree with Kyle. He said he ran on this. He said he was going to do it, and he's following through.
Senator Isaacson's already put out a pretty strong statement about this. My sense is that Senator Perdue is going to be more working behind the scenes, trying to nudge the policy in a different direction.
Well,
use his influence in that way.
And you've got to imagine that, as we said on Friday, Jim, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue is going to be quietly working against this. It's not going to help farmers if there's a trade war.
Yeah, you wouldn't be surprised if this thing escalates, if China's kind of targets imported chicken feet, which is a Georgia specialty.
Yeah. I didn't know chicken feet was a Georgia specialty.
Yeah, we ship it straight to China.
He's been talking to Abbott Massey, the chicken lobbyist at the state capitol.
So that was a Georgia chicken foot I ate there one time?
Probably.
All right. What a note to end the show on, talking about chicken feet. It's been a great conversation, but we are now completely out of time. Thank you, Melita Easters. So glad to have you, Heath Garrett, Kyle Wingfield, Jim Galloway. Thank you for being with us. If you've been watching us on Facebook Live at the GPB News Facebook page, thank you. Let us know. Post some comments about whether you like seeing this show put on the Facebook page. We're going to be back on Wednesday. We'll be on the radio. We'll also be back on Facebook. Until then, have a great evening and a good tomorrow.